with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonantoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Back at it here, live from Circa Resort and Casino. Welcome into the Lombardi Line, presented by BetMGM. Michael Lombardi on his off day, but very fortunate we have Jonathan Von Tobel, our senior NBA handicapper here at VSiN, on the network today. We spent a lot of hour one kind of recapping the action that happened last night. And as we look ahead to today, three games on here, one of which very short spread. Lakers, one-point favorite, 1.5 against the Grizzlies here. But we've also got the Miami Heat getting 6.5. In Milwaukee against the Bucks. Still don't know about the status of Giannis Antetokounmpo just yet. And the Denver Nuggets, just an 8-point favorite against the Timberwolves after that massive win.
Yeah, and so you asked me a question right before we came on the air. Do I have any bets for tonight? I responded no, because I have like under 229.5 for Lakers Grizzlies. Not worth mentioning now because we're off by 3 points. So if you're looking at it from that perspective, I think it is worth playing under if Ja comes back and that thing spikes back up to 229.5. So part of the thinking here is, when you're looking at like why this thing would go under, first off, it's the way that it was played the first time around, because it's pretty low scoring, or excuse me, a slow possession game, but the offense was crazy. If you look at the way that these two teams played one another, the Lakers from their shooting, Stormy, when you're talking about 16 of 37 from beyond the arc, 130.6 was their offensive rating. Rui Hachimura tied a franchise record for most points off the bench in a playoff game. And it was 11 of 14 from the floor. So these are all things that should regress to the mean here a little bit, and you should get a little less offensive punch from a team like the Los Angeles Lakers. And, you know, this is a bet I made on Sunday because I was like, you know, are we sure John Morant's even playing? Mm-hmm. And so sure enough, it starts to creep back down. So I would think that this probably gets back up to like 228, 228.5 if Ja's going to play. Shouldn't get much higher than that, maybe back up to that opener of 229.5 on Sunday. But I still think there's quite a few things that point to this series slowing down a little bit more in terms of scoring. And it was a pretty slow game the first time around anyway. I'll double check. I think we had 97 total possessions the first time when these two teams played in game one. So I think this has all the makings of some regression here in a slower game and a lower scoring game. And if John Morant doesn't play, then of course that really is going to take away the offensive efficiency for Memphis.
Obviously for game one as well on the Lakers side of things, huge night for Rui Hachimura, Austin Reeves, I'm him, screaming to everybody. We don't anticipate that same level of performance from those guys, but when you look at some of the prop betting numbers too, is this a night maybe where you think LeBron could have a big night because he didn't early on, because he was more of a facilitator to those other guys?
I mean, I think he wants to be, though, right? I think the goal is save yourself for when you really need it. And so when you're looking at it from that perspective, maybe you continue to play on that, and maybe it's not even looking at some of these other guys. I think you're probably trying to play LeBron assists potentially, right? Okay. It's at 6.5 at a plus 125 price. If he doesn't want to get as involved as we're talking about here, if he wants to acquiesce to others to kind of save his body a little bit with what they're going to have to do as they move forward, that might be the way to look. Now, the problem with that is twofold. One, 6.5 is a really high number, and he only had 5 in the first game, even when he was kind of acquiescing to everybody. So I think that's probably a way that you want to kind of circumvent that. Instead of playing like an Austin Reeves over points or a Rui Hachimura again points total prop, you could bet on LeBron maybe on the assists and going over that, or even D'Angelo Russell. Russell had a great game in game one, facilitating it. 7 assists in that matchup. That's maybe a way that you want to play it if you're not looking for LeBron, because I think that's probably the way that this team wants to do it. I think they kind of want LeBron to take a little bit of a backseat, have everybody else as much as they can, get them as far as they can before you really need to unlock it. Because remember, he's still dealing with that foot injury.
Yep.
And that he, I think, wants to save himself as much as possible.
And I was going to say, he's listed with right foot soreness, Anthony Davis, right foot stress, and Dennis Schroeder, right Achilles soreness, all probable, likely going to be out. I don't see a world where they're not out there playing, but just something to be aware of. And in terms of the series price, the Grizzlies as a 2 seed opened up minus 140 favorite in the set. Lakers plus 115. Now the Lakers are, you know, anywhere from minus 250, minus 295 in the set.
Yeah, and I think so. We were talking about this on the Sunday show, which was like, you can very much make the argument that 250 is somewhat cheap for the Lakers, just given the fact that, as we said, short sample size so far, but they have home court now. Ja Morant is injured, and they already matched up pretty well here with the Memphis Grizzlies. I thought Stormy, when they won that game, and it did start to move in that direction. The initial opener for the series was like minus 265, And then it really started to go in their direction once we got more word on John Morant's injury. So we're starting to take a little bit more shape here. But again, if you want to look around in the terms of like the different markets and the way to attack this series, going in and laying a game and a half still with the Los Angeles Lakers, I still think is a viable strategy for anybody that wants to play it. If you're talking about maybe getting a little bit even more of bang for your buck, for lack of a better term, if you want to go in and take -2.5 games with the Lakers at a +135 price. But I still think there's a small bit of value in laying -295, but if anything, playing with house money on the road here, job plays, even if they split this, you're talking about having a 1-1 split going back home. It's still a very, very favorable situation for LA.
With the Milwaukee Bucks, and we obviously still don't know what the deal with Giannis's back contusion is going to be for this game or long term, but you see their series price sitting -215. If Giannis does come on and play and ends up being okay, you're not going to see that again. Is that a good number to buy in on?
I mean, I think so. Look, so because he didn't play, obviously, in game one. He played the first quarter, got hurt there, and then we never really saw him again after that. And if you even look, so one of the things that plays into this game overall, too, again, we're talking about one game sample sizes, regressing to the mean, everything. Miami was 15 to 25 from three-point range, 60%, 59% from the floor overall, and they just lost one of their best shooters and scorers in Tyler Hero. So those things, you would think, are not going to match themselves as you move forward in the series. The other part of it, Stormy, is even in that game, even though they lost, Milwaukee still shot 49.5% from the floor. So they hit nearly 50% of their attempts. And if you look at that game and look at some of the tracking data, they were 11 of 43 from deep, and they generated 17 uncontested looks from three-point range. They only hit 6 of them. So they only shot 35% on wide-open looks. So they shot 49% from the floor. They didn't hit their wide-open shots and still were pretty competitive with Miami, who was shooting 60% from the floor, essentially. I think when you're putting all this together, even if Milwaukee's not going to have Giannis, they're still going to be pretty competitive in this series, even if it's not going to be today. Because I would assume if he doesn't play today, he'll be available for game three reading into it. But if he plays today, to your overall point, I would say yes. Like coming back in on Milwaukee to win it at a -225 price or cheaper, if that's available for you. Again, going back and thinking, all right, well, this was a team that was -1,000 in this series.
Yep.
If you want to lay 1.5 games with them at a relatively cheap price, that's a way to do it too. Again, because at 1.5 games, you win by 2 or more, then that's going to give you a winner there. I think that is the way that you're attacking this. And let me double check, because I think the series spread for those, it's pretty cheap when you're talking about -1.5 games, you know, in perspective of where this team was at. Yeah, +140 from Milwaukee to win by 2 or more games.
Just an update, too, on Tyler Hero. He's going to have surgery on that broken right hand this coming Friday. And they say likely out until the NBA Finals, should the Heat get there. So that is.
I know you were talking about the hockey players and, like, the toughness. Did you see the sequence with Hero? So he dives on the ball. He breaks his hand, but he stays in the game. And so, like, there's, like, 3 or 4 possessions where he's running up and down the floor, and he's, like, doubled over in pain. But Gabe Vincent doesn't realize it. So there's a half-court possession where he just slings the ball to Tyler Hero in the corner. So Hero's literally like this, and he stands up, catches the ball, hits a 3, and then goes right back down. Oh. Like, Jesus, my hand's broken. Like, I can't do this. It was a great sequence. Like, kudos to Hero for fighting through it, but it was a pretty funny moment.
That's awesome.
Not funny because he's in pain, but yes. it was a unique moment nonetheless. But it is a very big blow for Miami to lose Hero like that.
Yeah. Okay, so not broken, but Nikola Jokic, right wrist sprain. He's listed as questionable tonight in the Timberwolves-Nuggets game. Rudy Gobert with back spasms, questionable as well. But again, like, another one of those instances where it's the playoffs. You'd be very surprised if these guys aren't available. But Timberwolves getting 8 in this game against the Nuggets. Nuggets, of course, had a dominant win right out the gates. T-Wolves looked listless, checked out, hardly showed up. 109-80, the final in that game. As far as the numbers today, yeah, we see 8.5, total 222.5.
Yeah, and right in line with where we were for game one. So it's funny how the market works, right? In like the sexy matchups where you expect something out of teams, you'll get an adjustment from one game to another. Here, where it's probably the least popular series with not a lot of sizzle to it when it comes to handle, you know, just hang the same number. We'll see what happens. But I'll say this. So this is one where I'm kind of kicking myself, because in the series preview that I wrote up for the website, one of the things that I wrote about in at length was, I understand why you would be down on Denver in a grand scheme of things, right? Last 17 games of the regular season, they were 7-10, below average offensive and defensively, and a negative net rating. However, I thought they were kind of getting shorted in the series, Stormy, because I just don't know if Minnesota matches up well to exploit the weaknesses of Denver. So, for example, Denver, the worst transition defense off live rebounds in the postseason. Minnesota doesn't run. They play 2 centers, right? And even in game one, only 10% of their possessions started with a transition play. They lost numbers on their offensive rating through transition offense. They're a really good rim defense, the Minnesota Timberwolves. Well, that works to a certain extent, and it worked in game one. Here's the thing. Denver can shoot, and their center operates mostly from the perimeter, elbow, whatever. Like, that's not really something that you're going to be able to swallow them up within 4 feet like they did to Oklahoma City. And sure enough, in that game, in game one, what happened? The Nuggets, 153 offensive rating in transition, and of course, 15 to 25 shooting within 4 feet, but 15 to 36 from three. So they just spread them out and hit a bunch of threes. So I think this matchup really works well for Denver. So that's why I'm kicking myself, because I thought like going in and laying like 1.5 or 2.5 was actually the way to go from a series standpoint. And at least through one game, it's played out in that direction. So
now, I guess, what's the ceiling for how many games the T-Wolves can win?
I mean, I think you're still looking at like a 5-game series.
Yeah.
So, you know, you win one, maybe you come back home. But I just, as we've talked about before, I think matchups just play so much more important roles than numbers. And when you're talking about power ratings and whatnot. And I think that this is one of those where, again, the overall thought process of being down on Denver works, but this isn't the matchup to go to bat with it.
Yeah, maybe bet the plus 250 and the plus 210 on Denver to sweep and Denver to win 4-1 seem like viable options. Either way, you walk away profitable if you bet them both.
I mean, speaking of it really quickly, just because while they're down too, you could tell the market's down on them as well. They're up one game, they're the one seed, and yet you're still getting plus 250 mm-hmm. for them to win in 4 and plus 210 to win for them and win in 5.
Yeah, Nuggets not getting any love, it seems. But, I mean, they didn't really get a ton coming into the postseason in general either. Like, everybody was talking about the Suns. Everybody's talking about other teams.
Oh, and look, like, in their next round, they're going to be up against it. And I think that's where you want to take that shot. I just didn't know if it was with Minnesota.
Okay, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back to the NFL draft, one of the top prospects, but also one of the most controversial, Jalen Carter, has spoken to media for the first time.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Become a VSiN Pro subscriber today and get our daily email that recaps all the best bets from every show host and guest. You also get unlimited access to the VSiN.com/picks page, sort picks by sport, matchup, event date, and more. You can also check out the top VSiN experts leaderboard to view betting records, profit, and ROI to see which VSiN expert has the hot hand. For VSiN Pro picks, betting splits, power ratings, plus 24/7 video access. Become a VSiN Pro subscriber today. Sign up now. Just $9.99 at VSiN.com/subscribe. Before the break, I said that Jalen Carter had spoken to media. He spoke to one media outlet.
Oh, okay.
It was HBO's Real Sports with Bryant Gumbel. They were doing a segment on his agent, Drew Rosenhaus, and he became a part of it. And he made some comments. It was the first time that he's really broken his silence speaking to anybody regarding the reckless driving charge in connection with the January car accident that, of course, resulted in loss of life of a teammate of his at Georgia, as well as another team staffer. And he was asked, at least from what was put out there, was asked about the impact of that event on his draft stock and the meetings that he had had with teams. And he said, and again, I didn't see the clip. I've just seen the quotes from it. So I don't know the way that it was said or anything like that. But he said, I feel like it's going to matter a little bit. And because, you know, NFL teams look deep into your life, it could have been something I did back in elementary school. I'm pretty sure they'd know that. So this coming out at a time that it came out, I'm pretty sure is going to affect it a little bit.
You think so?
Yes, a little bit. He said a couple teams asked him about the incident during interviews, but none really focused particularly heavy on it. Just wanted to know his side of the story, but didn't really press the issue too much. Obviously, yes, this has been a big question. But I feel like more and more as people are talking about Jalen Carter and the on-field athlete he is, the expectation is that he's not going to slip very much. His position prop number is set at 6.5, and it is a plus money price at the under if you think he can go top six.
Yeah, I mean, I think the team that has been thrown out there as the team that would take that risk is Seattle, right? And I think that would make a ton of sense. Especially when we've kind of come to realize that, you know, using a top five pick on a project like an Anthony Richardson potentially might not be there, because that was the other popular selection for Seattle, right? Was that I would take a look at that under. You know, this is something where you and I actually got to be on the air the second that this all kind of went down for him. And it was one of the things that we talked about, and it was one of the first things that we discussed, which was, you know, we're going to talk about this for a while, and he's going to drop in terms of odds and whatnot. But I think by the time we come back to draft day itself, he's going to be pretty close to, again, a consensus top five guy. Look where we're at, right? Draft position is 6.5. And I would look at that under. When you're talking about balancing out talent with what's going on with his personal situation, we have seen teams, we'll put it this way, we have seen teams take bigger personality risks. And I think that we know that teams value personality, and they value what those players do in their communities, but they value winning more. And I think that a team like Seattle, who really, I think, buys into their own culture, to and rightfully so to a certain extent, would feel comfortable taking a guy like that and thinking that we could make him, or not even make him, just make sure that he would fit in the parameters of being a good player and human while he is with us.
Right, and I think that the place matters for a Jalen Carter. There are certain players where the head coach matters, the culture matters, the group that you're surrounding yourself with matters. Because if he's focused and motivated and determined, he's somebody that you could talk about as a generational talent, right? Mm-hmm. But if he falls to the wayside with some of those things, then who knows what the situation is going to be. And I think Pete Carroll is probably like an ideal head coach and situation for that.
Absolutely. And look, and this is, again, one of those teams that we talked about with Houston, except they don't, their second pick's not as high, but this is another team with a second first round pick. So you yourself as a team, give yourself that wiggle room of, okay, we can draft, you know, whatever we want here. And with that second overall pick or that second first round pick, we can move up. We can do all sorts of things. If we really do want to, let's say, draft a quarterback of the future, should one of these guys start to slide. But you're also in a unique position, Stormy, where if you're as a team, if you're operating from a team building standpoint, we don't have to press for a quarterback in the first round. We can go get positions of need, whether it be a defensive tackle or a wide receiver later, and then tackle quarterback later in the draft, next year, things like that. And I think that's why Seattle is uniquely equipped for multiple reasons to be the spot where he lands if he's going inside the top six.
In terms of talent, period, is he the best defensive player for you, or is it Will Anderson, who's been talked about most as being the first defensive player off the board?
Oh, I mean, think talent, period. It's I think it's Jalen Carter. I don't think there's really any question about that. It's just whether or not, as a, you know, a personality, he's going to fit. If ever, like, there's a reason why, when we talked about this before this happened, he was the favorite to go with the first, you know, the first defensive player selected, because if you look by any evaluation standards, I don't think there's many people who have a defensive player above Jalen Carter. Mm-hmm.
Where things sit right now, Will Anderson -250 odds on favorite, followed by Texas Tech's Tyree Wilson +275, and Carter sitting there at 10-1 to be the first defensive player off the board. We have seen a little bit of movement in another positional market, tight ends.
Yeah.
Whereas very recently, it seemed like Utah's Dalton Kincaid was going to be the first tight end off the board in terms of the market. He was anywhere between like -175 and over a $2 favorite to be the first tight end selected. Now Michael Mayer of Notre Dame has flipped back to being the odds-on favorite here.
I would assume that's just market buyback, right? Because like you were saying when you were looking up, I haven't seen anything that changed. The reason why Kincaid, I think, flipped to being the favorite, that came, if I remember correctly, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, I think I came right around Mayer's pro day, right, where he's listed as like 265, but then he weighs in at 249. So he's a lot lighter than you initially expected. And that puts you pretty much on even playing field with Kincaid, who's 246. So the only real difference between these two is an inch and 3 pounds. So maybe that makes them more on even footing. But I mean, reading a lot in terms of evaluation of these two, it does seem that Kincaid does actually have the edge. I'm not surprised if Mayer does go off as the actual favorite here, at least in terms of being the in a draft position battle with Kincaid. I think they're relatively equal, and it's just whether or not what you evaluate as a tight end that you need. Do you want more of a, you know, upright wide receiver-esque tight end, because that's Kincaid, who can kind of fill that flex position, or Michael Mayer, who is a little bit more balanced in terms of his ability to block at a higher level while also filling the needs of a tight end?
Mayer, I remember I went to the BYU-Notre Dame game here that was at Allegiant Stadium, and he was just dominant. Well, it was
event drop. I mean, you go all these places.
Well, I remember it was particularly special because being a college football reporter, I'm usually on the road for other games, and I got a weekend off, which I never get.
It
happened to be the weekend that Notre Dame.
Oh, she went for fun, not for work.
Correct. Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, like I do get assigned a lot of BYU games, but Notre Dame game, I'm not there yet. You know, one day maybe in my dreams. But I am a Notre Dame fan, and my family was all in town for the game, and so they were going to go without me. And then I got to go, and it was very fun. And
saw my quizzical look of how that works, but
life's hard. But Mayor
San Diego State, Notre Dame.
Can you just let you know? All right.
Sorry. Go ahead. No, my
apologies. Listen, I get enough of this from Mike Palm. Okay. Oh, okay. Let me and Tim Murray live our lives. But he was fantastic in that game, and I've seen Dalton Kincaid up close and personal a lot, covering the Utah Utes as much as I do in the Pac-12. And he was like an absolute force, and he was Cam Rising's favorite target for a reason. Really enjoyed watching him. And good to note on the market, like, again, this is another one of those places where you want to shop around, because in the last hour, we're seeing now, if you do like Michael Mayer, whereas just moments ago he was mm-hmm. minus 175, he's minus 115, and their odds are tied at BetMGM, whereas at DraftKings, you can still get the plus 145 on Dalton Kincaid, and Mayer is the significant favorite there. So it's interesting that these markets aren't on par everywhere right now.
Yeah.
Just depends on, I guess,
individual liability.
Exactly. Yeah. Like where the money is coming from. In terms of the over under prop for how many tight ends could go in the first round, number set at 2.5 right now, the over plus 225, under $3.
Yes. The draft is a really unique animal, right? Because we have a lot of information in our hands. We get to bet it. We know about being on the even footing with bookmakers and stuff. I also think it's unique in that, you know, you shouldn't be afraid to go in and lay some pretty high prices, especially with things that you feel relatively solid about, right? And mm-hmm. all the information that's been out there, I don't know. I mean, you've, I think, read a lot more because you're with Lombardi doing this every day. I haven't read many mock drafts that have three tight ends going in the first round. And if you're banking on Sam LaPorta or Luke Musgrave, which seems to be the two other tight ends that are, you know, in the top four, we'll call it, being a first-round selection, I just don't think that's really the case. So I think when you're looking around at tight ends, you know, 2.5 under minus 300, I think you're locking in Michael Mayer, you're locking in Dalton Kincaid. I don't see many scenarios in which you're getting beat on that with Sam LaPorta or Luke Musgrave going in the first round. Are you?
Well, I get why the number is set at where it is, because people have talked about this tight end class being so strong mm-hmm. comparatively with the wide receivers that could go in the first round, that those tight ends just – they feel like that group is stronger. But no, I do not see three of them
right.
going.
Because it's also about positional value, right? And where it's like with tight ends, like, are there high-end tight ends important? Sure. But at the back end of the first round, you're finding more positional value in your offensive linemen and your edge rushers and like all of these other things that you're trying to fill your roster with, and just more important positions for your overall team. A tight end is not going to change the landscape of your team unless it's a, you know, mm-hmm. what we're talking about here, these Dalton Kincaids or
is he going to be
Mayer.
Travis Kelce?
Right,
is he
exactly.
Be, yep.
And even then, you know, you're not spending a first round pick on that when there's, you know, a offensive lineman that you think can be a starter in your system, especially a tackle. And I just think when you're putting those things together, again, people might balk at minus 300, but there is value in big numbers, especially when you're talking about an information-based event like this. Mm-hmm. And I think minus 300 is actually way to go there.
And we've talked a lot about the quarterback's number sitting 4.5. That number has changed a little bit to the over minus 110, under just minus 130. And I know that Michael and I have talked a lot about not having the belief that Hendon Hooker is going to go in the first round.
Keep dropping.
Just keep
dropping. Get it cheaper, and I'll be in on the under.
Keep going. A couple new position prop totals that have been added as well for defensive players and offensive players to go. So just keep an eye on these markets as not only numbers shift, but new things are added to the board as well. We're going to take a quick break. Harry Gagan, host of the Against All Odds podcast, former sportsbook supervisor, joins us coming up next.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Before you make your next bet, be sure to check out VSiN.com and get in on the current betting splits data. Want to know where the money and bets are moving for every game? Well, the betting splits page is updated with DraftKings odds every 10 minutes, so you can see all the changes in action. Find out where the public's betting best on the number of tickets and where the money doesn't match the public opinion. You can check out not just today's action, but future events as well. Betting splits, another way VSiN's here to make you a smarter, better year-round. Check out today's betting splits for every game at VSiN.com, particularly beneficial this time of year when we are in full swing with the NBA and NHL postseason. Stormy Bonantoni and Jonathan Von Tobel with you. Michael Lombardi out for the day. As we welcome in good friend of the show, Harry Gagnon, host of the Against All Odds podcast, joins us now, former sportsbook supervisor. And I know you're all invested in both playoffs right now.
Oh, absolutely. What's up, guys? Yeah, Stormy. I'm wondering if Mike was just out because we couldn't give him crap about my Sacramento Kings pick plus the 1.5. I know you liked that too, and he didn't like it. I'm just wondering if he failed because he didn't want to hear it from me. I don't know.
Probably something like that, Harry, or just that, like, he needed a day off of Bruce Springsteen. No, who am I kidding? He doesn't need a day off of Bruce Springsteen. But let's talk a little bit about the games that we have coming up tonight. Obviously, the Grizzlies and Lakers going head-to-head. Ja Morant, TBD, whether or not he's going to be available, mm-hmm. dealing with the soft tissue bruise to that re-injured right hand. What are you looking at with this one as they take on the Lakers, who got that game one win?
Yeah, that was something else by the Lakers. Great performance. I mean, it opened up at 227. I'm looking at the total. Opened up 227. I see it now, 226.5. There was 240 scored in game one. Lakers had four players with 20-plus points, including Hachimura and Reeves, who had great games. Mm-hmm. I don't see that happening again here. I'm going to go under the 226.5. The Grizz looked lost on offense in game one, especially when Morant went out. He's mentioned he's a game-time decision tonight. If not for a huge effort from Jaren Jackson with 31, the Grizz may have not have reached 100 points in this game. And I got a stat for you guys. The Lakers, in their last 17 playoff games, 15 of them have gone under 227. I'm going under the number tonight.
Harry, I'm curious, do you wait at all to like see what Morant's status is? Because I would assume if he plays, this goes up to about, what, 220.5 or so? There will be some movement, wouldn't there?
Yeah, Jonathan, I think there would too. But, you know, watching that game, I think Memphis played very well, and Morant especially efficiently in the first half in that game where he wasn't shooting up threes. But the driving to the hole, I mean, last year he led the, you wouldn't think it. You'd think it would be Embiid or someone else. He led the league last year in points in the paint, which is crazy to think. But, you know, there's a lot of there's some risk, but a lot of reward, but some risk when he drives to the hole like that, like what he did in game one with that injury. I'm not so sure, you know, that risk could, you know, it could be very delicate. I'm still banking on that, you know, even if he plays, I'm still, and again, Lakers, great job by their bench. I don't foresee that happening again, shooting that well, and I still like the under.
The Minnesota Timberwolves, we'll see whether or not they show up today. They didn't want to against the Nuggets in game one.
I think they'll physically be there.
Maybe. Who knows at this point, really? It's anybody's guess. No, but hopefully this game is a little bit more competitive. The spread set basically the same as what it was in that earlier matchup, despite the 29-point loss for the Timberwolves. Is there anything game-wise or prop-wise you're looking at here?
Yeah, you know, I don't like the 8.5 number there, just because you mentioned they didn't show up in game one. So maybe they do a little bit here, but more than anything else, I like Nikola Jokic over 22.5 points here for the Nuggets. He didn't have to do much in game one. He had plenty of rest, only had 13 points, only played like 28 minutes. I think he has a big game here in game two. Like I said, didn't have to play a lot of minutes there. And before this game against Minnesota, where he didn't have to play and didn't have a lot of shots attempts, in his last 11 straight playoff games, he had 22 or more points. I think he goes over the number tonight.
I like it. All right, let's move on to a couple of other things. Hockey, I know that this is more a Stormy's wheelhouse, but I get to ask questions here. All right. Boston Bruins, dominant force. Moneyline prices are pretty extreme. So are we going to attack this another way here with the Bruins?
Jonathan, they are kind of rough when you're laying high over 200s and stuff like that. So I'm going to lay, how about this? I'm going to lay the 1.5 here, and you get plus money. You're getting plus 110. This record-breaking Bruins team is phenomenal. They scored, they won by two in game one. This team is a machine. We've seen this all season. Boston is 16-1 overall in their last 17 games, and it's really more than the offense. It's the defense that has led the way in those 17 games. In those 17 games, they have given up more than three goals just once. So this Boston team is still dynamic on offense. David Pastrnak was third in the league in points. And Brad Marchand, both guys are studs. Marchand, 14-4 in his last 18 playoff games, scoring at least a point. 14 of 18 games, he's had at least 1 point. Team is a machine, like I said. I'm going to lay the 1.5 and take the plus 110.
And Linus Ullmark has certainly helped as well, backing up that strong D for the Boston Bruins. Just also good to know for anybody out there, Patrice Bergeron is going to be out again today. He missed game one with an injury. The Bruins still got the job done. I mean, game one, excuse me, with an illness. Game two with a reported injury. But they were able to get the job done cleanly game one. As far as the Stars game coming up a little bit later, obviously it was a double overtime, lengthy performance. The Stars ended up not being able to get the job done. They're looking to bounce back. And I saw you're looking at a prop here on Jamie Benn. What do you like for him tonight?
Yeah, you know, guys, if you go to extrapoints.com, every single day we give out our picks, me and the degenerate trifecta, and I do my video every single day. It's up there. I've hit five in a row, and I like Jamie. This is my play tonight on that, on extra points. Jamie Benn, minus 130 to record at least 1 point. Benn has had a point in game one against Minnesota. He's had at least 1 point in six of his last seven games, and eight of his last 10 games against Minnesota, he's had a point. Dallas a little bit on the ropes here. Need some offense. Need Benn to come up big. I think he gets at least a point. You got to lay $1.30, but I think it's pretty good value still.
Yeah, 2 goals and 6 assists for him over his last 9 games and should take on a bigger minutes role with Joe Pavelski in concussion protocol. He's going to be unavailable for this one tonight. Right. So I do like that angle for sure with Benn. Just looking at last night's performances, we saw so many underdogs on the road come through in the NHL. Is there anything just like angle-wise moving forward? Do you look for those home teams to bounce back the coming game? How much do you take from the performances you saw game one? Anything that you really took away from yesterday?
Yeah, you know, I don't know. I mean, that was wild. I mean, the Knights losing is one thing, but to only have 17 total shots in the entire game, unbelievable job by Winnipeg. Mm-hmm. Again, Colorado only one goal. Very tough. You would probably figure bounce back is probably going to happen. Another game that I'm interested in, I have the Kings at 40-1 to win the Stanley Cup, and I know they're down now. I mean, their price is way low now, but the way they handled that game against Edmonton, down 2-0, down 3-1, to come back, a lot of people would think that Edmonton's got to get back on the board here, especially with McDavid not having any points in that game, which is wild. I'm not so sure, because when Edmonton, they did make it to the conference finals last year, but before that, when McDavid hadn't bounced, in the first round a lot, they haven't had a lot of success. I would think a lot of people are going to probably think Edmonton bounces back here. I'm not so sure. I love Kopitar. He had a great game. Kempe did too in game one for the Kings. I'd be a little worried if you just think that, oh, well, Edmonton's got to bounce back here. I don't like that angle right now, at least on the Oilers.
Interesting. Really good stuff, Harry. Appreciate your time. Thank you so much for doing this.
Always, guys. Take care. Thanks.
Harry Gagnon, check out the Against All Odds podcast at AAO Harry on Twitter. And yeah, like the Oilers are just a hard team to trust, but they were playing so well coming into the postseason, won 14 to 15 games prior to that game one loss against the Kings. Two of those wins during that span were against LA as well. We did just get some news though that came through on Twitter about the status of Giannis Antetokounmpo.
Yeah, and it's kind of what we expected, right? The doubtful game with Milwaukee continues. He is upgraded to questionable. That upgrade is telling us that he is going to play. It's a questionable designation, but he's going to play tonight with the upgrade. This comes right around this time where they're going to go through shoot-around, so it makes a lot of sense. And I will say this, Stormy, like right now, I went in, I bet it Milwaukee at -8.5. Yes, that is post-adjustment. We'll put it this way. Milwaukee closed as a 9.5-point favorite in game one, everything equal. That means Tyler Hero on one side, Giannis on the other. Well, if Giannis is going to play, this spread is a point shorter than game one, but Tyler Hero's not playing.
Mm-hmm.
That's not something that really makes sense, especially if we're assuming that Giannis is going to play today. So I still think it's playable at 8.5. That's the number that's out there right now. Should probably close at about 9.5 or so once Giannis is officially announced as active.
Really good stuff. Okay, we will come back on the other side of this quick break and continue some of our NBA conversation, because I think there is still some potential value on the board, teams that JVT thinks might be worth targeting in the futures market to get out of the Eastern or Western Conference, as well as to win it all based on some of the numbers available. So stick with us. This is the Lombardi Line, presented by BetMGM on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
BetMG BetMGM, the king of sportsbooks, unleashes the spirit of Las Vegas with BetMGM Rewards. Every time you make a wager at BetMGM, you can earn BetMGM Rewards points that you can redeem for online bonus credits like bonus bets and bet insurance tokens. So if you're planning a trip to Vegas, remember, you can also convert your BetMGM points into MGM Rewards points that you can use towards dining, shows, and hotel rooms at over 20 MGM Resorts properties located on the Las Vegas Strip, as well as nationwide. Sign up with BetMGM or log on today to get an even bigger piece of the action with BetMGM Rewards. Eligibility restrictions apply. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to please play responsibly and offer resources to help you make appropriate choices. Visit BetMGM.com for terms and conditions. Must be 21 years of age or older to wager. New and existing customer offer. All promotions subject to qualification and eligibility requirements. Rewards issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets. Bonus bets expire 7 days from issuance. Please gamble responsibly. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. We're wrapping things up on the Lombardi Line, live from Circa Resort and Casino. Jonathan Von Tobel in for Michael today. Stormy Bonantoni with you as well. And, whoa, you're staring at me very deeply. What happened?
We have breaking news.
Get it going.
There is a possum loose at Dodger Stadium.
Again? Oh, no, it's not the Dodgers. It's the A's, right?
Oh, okay. Now you got me back with some news. It's like a well-known thing.
So he's on the field out there, or?
The report just says that there are a dozen Dodger Stadium workers chasing a possum in the upper deck right now.
Intense. Dangerous. Yeah. But there's something with the Oakland A's, right? Where they had...
I mean, their toilets and sewer system generally overflows.
So, yes, yeah. There's that. But there was in the broadcast booth, some sort of a creature had been living in their like broadcast booth, and they couldn't broadcast from it because it had gone to the restroom all over it while they were gone.
There was an animal living there.
It was a possum. See,
yep. There you go.
I'm not crazy.
No,
I mean, I am, but that's a different story for a different day.
Headline: more possums than fans at Oakland A's games. That's probably true.
Time for our pro tip of the Lombardi Line today. Every single show here at VSiN does them, trying to give just as good a betting advice as we can to you. I mean, even though I feel like we've done that over the last 2 hours, but this is just one little snippet, one little nugget to try to help y'all out. Go to VSiN.com/subscribe to get them for every single show every day. But this one comes from you, JVT, talking about some different series and way to bet them.
Yeah, teams that are down, you know, 0-2, 2-0, going back home. In the first half, it's a popular trend. Well, in the last 32 instances in the first half, they are 15-15-2 against the spread. So that trend's been baked into the market. If you're running to going back the Golden State Warriors or anybody who are in these situations, I think that it's just you're not getting the value that you think you are. Everybody knows about it. The books know about it. It's been hardly baked into a lot of these situations. And as we discussed, Stormy, right, what was the – so the Warriors are 5.5-point favorites for the game and I think 4-point favorites in the first half. Mm-hmm. Not a lot of value there. Mm-hmm. So just a warning for anybody out there.
Just keep that in mind. Again, free daily betting tips on VSiN.com, searchable by sport and by show. Okay, let's talk this through a little bit because we can start maybe with the Kings-Warriors series and who eventually gets out of it. When I was talking to you before the show earlier today, I was looking at the Clippers odds. Hey, would that be a good bet for them to win the Western Conference sitting 13-1? And you said might be worth jumping on the Kings, still available at some sportsbooks, 10-1.
Yeah, look, I think the Kings, they're up 2-0. They're favored in the series now. And so when you look at them to win the Western Conference and you kind of shop around, BetMGM had them at 10-1 to win the Western Conference. I think that is a playable number when you're talking about them winning this series and the potential of them winning this series against Golden State. Moving on into the next round against an opponent at either Los Angeles or Memphis that I think they can beat, and then getting to a Western Conference Finals. Now, the trick is when you get to the Western Conference Finals, if you do, you know, you're probably the most likely outcome. You're probably going to face the Phoenix Suns because the Suns are still favored in their series with the Los Angeles Clippers. They'd probably be favorites in their series with the Denver Nuggets. So that's going to be a probable outcome that they're facing them. And so you're probably sitting on 10-1 with a team that's in the range of like a 4-1 underdog in the series. So it's not the most hedgeable opportunity if that's going to be there. But I do think that a path to, at the very least, a Western Conference Finals is there for them. And then there's the potential of not taking on the Phoenix Suns in the Western Conference Finals and what you can do with a ticket like that. So, yeah, I think at 10-1, this is a team that can win the West and it can make it to a Western Conference Finals given the path that's in front of them.
It is still so wild, even just looking at this futures odds board, to see how much shorter the Warriors are than the Kings and all of these, because despite being down 0-2, which we know is very, very historically rare for teams to come back to win their respective best of seven series in the NBA postseason when they are in that situation. But the Warriors still getting the majority of the love on the futures board for the Western Conference, as well as to go ahead and win it all. If you had to pick a team in the West to actually like get like the team that you believe in most at this point to go all the way? Who is it?
I mean, I'm always a creature of habit, so I guess do I stick with my preseason selection of the Clippers, who did grab one on the road against the Phoenix Suns? But I guess I'll go with the chalk and say that Phoenix, when they are firing on all cylinders, is probably your most likely champion of the Western Conference, given everything that they have in terms of individual talent. I still think they're a lot more flawed than the market would indicate, right? Especially when you see some of the issues with their bench. I mean, is Torrey Craig going to average 20 points a game? Because if he is, they're going to be awesome. But if he's not, then I think that there's a lot more holes in this roster than we think. But I think when everything's equal, I think the Suns are probably the team that comes out.
Given that the Clippers and Suns are tied in the series to this point, I said earlier, it feels like the LA did their job, right? They stole one on the road early, but mission obviously not accomplished yet. But sitting at 18-1, I feel like that's a pretty good number to be able to go ahead and try to get in on them. If like, because I do think that they can take this to 7 with the Suns and potentially win.
Look, you're preaching to the choir. As somebody who, as you know, I came on with you guys, like, I've got the Clippers a small bit to win the series. I've got more on them at plus 2.5 games. I think the market is really low on the Clippers. And especially if, as we talked about, your guy Kawhi Leonard, if he's going to play at the level that he's been playing, like, he is going to be a force to be reckoned with and arguably the best player on any floor when he's playing in a series. So I would agree with you. Like, much of what the 18-1 is about is two things. It's playing the Suns and not having Paul George. But I do think that the market is a little too low. So if we're talking about, like, again, like, just like value in the number, should those odds be higher for them to win the Western Conference? I would say so. So I would agree with your thought process that at 18-1, the Clippers would be worth playing, especially if we're talking about just winning the conference, because they are – the problem with them too, Stormy, is the fact that in the past they have not matched up well with Denver. Denver has had their number since they blew that series in the bubble. I think things have changed now with the addition of Plumlee and more pieces since the trade deadline. And post-trade deadline, they did go to Denver, and they pushed them to overtime. And if you remember, that was the game where they had the story afterwards, that actually when they were flying into Denver, the plane got struck by lightning, and they all thought they were going to die. So, like, it was a weird scenario for them. But I do think they match up better with Denver. But overall, to your point, like, is there value in a number like that? I would say yes.
Well, and I just think, should they find a way to come out of this series with the Suns and win, and then you get Paul George back, the number on them is just going to completely plummet.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's just a different animal.
I mean, look, not to cut you off, I apologize, but like, even if they win game 3 at home, like, that number is going to start to alter for them too.
And to your point on Kawhi Leonard, 38 points game 1, 31 last night, and it's very rare to be on the same court as Kevin Durant and to like say, is Kevin Durant the best player on the court right now? Because of what Kawhi does when he is at full strength. It's just so rare that we actually get to see him healthy and playing at his peak, because we haven't gotten to the last couple of years. As far as the East goes, where do things stand for you? I know that the Giannis injury will certainly impact your general thoughts on that.
Yeah, but I think, look, so he's going to – I'm like 90% sure he's going to play today. So if he's going to play today, he's going to be available. They should win this series. I think they're going to win their second-round series against whoever they're going to have to face. I think that Milwaukee is the best team in the Eastern Conference. Now, the margin between them and Boston is very slight, and the reason why right now in the Eastern Conference they are behind Boston is because they're down in their series and Giannis is injured. But I do think that home court's ultimately going to make a really big difference in what is ultimately looking like going to be a Boston-Milwaukee Eastern Conference Finals.
And just because I've been so in on this freaking Beantown parlay that I have with the Bruins and the Celtics together, I have never rooted for the Celtics more in my life than I am for them to get this done for me. I could really use it.
I mean, look, they're a good team.
So fun.
And they're a fun team. Like,
they're
that's fun. The other part. Like, they're a really good team. And their ceiling, both offensively and defensively, is extremely high. And I still think, even in a series with Milwaukee, like I mentioned, Stormy, like, the hairs that you're splitting between them and Milwaukee are very fine. And that's why I think the difference is just ultimately who gets home court in that series should they ultimately play. Because Boston's uniquely equipped to handle Giannis and the Bucks and what they want to do with the bodies that they have on that roster.
Boston and the 76ers, if and when they match up, it's the curse of the second round for Philadelphia. Well, how many games can they win?
There's that. And I think coming back to the original point of what we talk about all the time with these, I think matchups just really matter. Like, the rosters, how they match up with one another, who has to defend who. And with the amount of, like, athletic wings that can score from multiple positions that Boston has, Philly just doesn't have the options to match up with them defensively. I mean, they sacrificed some of their defense for offense when they put Tyrese Maxey, back into the starting lineup. and now they're a little lower in terms of their defensive output while increasing what they can do offensively. Those lineups don't really have multiple options for Brown and for Tatum.
Good stuff. Appreciate you doing this. Again, make sure you check out the Hardwood Handicappers podcast. New episodes coming out every single day with all of these games going on, getting the latest from JVT as well as Kelly Bidlin. That is a wrap for us today. Jealous you already got your photos done. I have to go do that now. Right. So it's time for me to be awkward and show my lack of coordination to the world. Just you wait. Good luck with your bets today. Enjoy the NBA and NHL playoff games.